My mom always said, life was like a box of chocolates.
Welcome back to another episode of Talkin' Tom, a Pod Hanks Tomcast. I'm here with Josie.
And I'm here with Daniel.
And we're talking uncommon type stories 13 and 14. On the menu today, we got the past is important to us and stay with us. A lot of us.
Here's some themes that I saw on these two books, or these two books, these two stories was that they're both very, they are very futuristic, but they focus so much on the past.
Yeah. Recurring theme in this novel, I guess, as a typewriter, is a recurring thing. These are also two very beefy stories.
Ooh, yeah.
They're long.
I'll admit, I was catching up on my reading mere moments before.
Same. Well, I got thrown for a loop. I was audiobooking the second story.
Right.
What I thought was the second story.
Oh, no.
Story in the correct order of the book, but the audiobook reads it out of order, and I was on the story ahead, so I'm ahead for next time, but
that's good.
I have caught up now on the other.
I wonder if that was like an intentional thing.
I was trying to gauge that, but like it's Audible, not like a CD. They didn't like run out of space. So.
Well, didn't it have a different title for one of the stories too?
Oh, maybe?
Because I feel like there was one that me and you were both talking about that was the same story, but we both had different titles.
That's possible. I'll have to dive back in and research.
You have to start the book over.
Well, how are things with you?
You know, they're great.
Yeah? Busy.
I can't complain. I mean, I talked a lot about how I had discovered the band Fleetwood Mac last time.
Yes. Still going strong?
Yeah, they're still good. So they're still making great music.
Absolutely.
And that's pretty much it.
Yeah, just busy, lots of cool projects coming up.
It's all just like work, no results for anything yet, unfortunately.
I didn't realize I wasn't following your Sugar and Satire blog, so I followed it the other day and then realized that you're pushing like almost 3,000 followers, so like kudos for that.
Thanks.
Like, geez.
I mean, I do it all the time. I'm like on there all the time.
Yeah.
It's my side hustle, man.
So many side hustles.
Tom's got a side hustle.
Yeah.
Millions of them.
Book, I guess, novel writing is a side hustle. It's like a pretty up there thing.
He literally never stops.
Yeah, well, let's dive right in. The past is important to us. Right into the future.
Mm-hmm. This one's cool.
This is very cool. This is one of my favorites, I think. I'll say it right up front.
That's bold. I respect it.
It just is like a fully realized story in a universe. And I think it's really weird, too.
Right. You just take these things as fact. Like, you don't question... I mean, we should explain the premise.
Yeah.
It's a time travel story, essentially. Some millions of years in the future. I don't remember how far in the future.
Yeah. Not terribly. Not millions of years. But, you know, yeah.
But they've somehow developed this technology where they can go back in time, but they can only go to a very specific moment.
Yeah, there's like moments through history that are sprinkled that they can go to.
Okay.
But I like the excuse that they give of why, which is sort of that, for example, our main character, his name is Bert, he's going back to a specific date in 1939 in New York City. And the reason he can do that specific time and date is because the place that the company that does the time travel and the building that they're in has this room, and this room structurally has not changed since 1939. So when he is time traveled, he comes to the same location and no variables exist.
Mm-hmm. Which is very similar to the movie, with Meg Ryan and Hugh Jackman. Basically, he's like an old-timey like British prince or something. Or the guy who's like invents elevators or something. I don't remember. But they can time travel because there's one building still in New York City that's like the exact same.
Oh.
That's how they travel through time.
I don't know if I've seen that.
It's actually good.
We don't even know the title, so someone will say. Yeah, this one was really cool. The basic plot is that there's this guy, his name's Bert. He started a company. years ago that was insanely successful. I think he says, like, he has $756 billion to his name.
Yeah.
And one of the things he enjoys doing is you can pay $6 million to time travel, a little time travel vacation.
He's obsessed with it.
Yes, this specific date.
Mm-hmm.
And he becomes obsessed with it because he starts to fall for this woman he keeps seeing, the woman in the green dress.
Carmen, which is great. That sounds like a beautiful love story. Oh, but there's a hitch. This guy's a married man.
Yeah, and he's in his 60s.
Yeah.
But with technology, he's had so much surgery that he looks like a mid-30s, I think they say.
Mm-hmm. So they kind of, or Tom does us the justice of at least describing, Bert takes his wife, Cindy, to 1939 with him. And she is a miserable bitch about it the whole time. I hate the word bitch, but I mean, she complains about every single thing. She won't eat hot dogs. She thinks people's hair smells bad. She's like, wine, 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 wine. And he's like, well, this is like a fun thing I like. So bye, gotta do it by myself now.
Yeah, they sort of build it up as like, here's something I love that the person I'm in love with hates. And it's sort of like this bridge between them.
Yeah.
It's kind of sad.
So he kind of idealizes this woman in the green dress.
Yeah.
It's like, she never complained. I mean, it's problematic, but...
Yeah, I mean, he likes her on the principle that she's pretty to start.
Yeah, she's pretty, and... Yeah, she just, like, is very feminine.
Yeah, he describes her in, like, physical ways that are... would be really off-putting to ever hear. He's like, she's bigger than Cindy, but she really fills out those curves. He's like,
ugh. Don't ever say that. That is so rude.
But I think it almost seems like they do that so that you understand his mindset.
Mm-hmm.
Where like he has this weirdly old... He's in the future, but he has this really old-timey mindset.
Yeah, so that's like, why he fits in better.
Yeah. It's problematic, obviously, but I think that's intentional for the character.
I could see that. I think there's just something that like is so sad about...
Bert.
Yeah.
Yeah, you sort of... You pity him, which is interesting because you've been told he has like $700 billion.
Yeah, he should be happy.
And he has this thing that he loves through this, but yeah, he's sort of, I don't know. He's unfulfilled, mm-hmm. even though he's done so much for the world.
So he keeps going back to the same moment before the doctors or the time traveler people tell him, hey, your body physically cannot do this, like, anymore. Yeah. You got one more trip.
It's like a number of times you can do it, and he's hit the... It's like, this is like his sixth time going. So we spend, like, his, I think, fourth and fifth times in the beginning, and then on his sixth one is when he learns that he can't. And the reason he keeps going back without his wife is he wants to spend time with his woman.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know what the logistics of, or kind of what... If time travel exists, do the merits of marriage still exist if you're time traveling? Because this seems to push the envelope of...
Well, he consciously removes his wedding ring.
Yeah.
Which is like... Because one time he meets Carmen and she takes note of his wedding ring and is like...
Yes.
This... So then the next time he's like... Boop. Take that thing off.
Done. Yeah, and he's sort of... He's playing this sort of like nice guy thing where he comes prepared into the past with... The idea is that the World Fair is happening in New York, and he has VIP tickets to these things that people are waiting hours and hours for. So he sort of uses that as, like, the end to, like, get to know the woman in the green dress, whose name is Carmen. It's like, oh, look, I have these VIP tickets. And they're like, but we're not a VIP. And he's like, well, neither am I. Take these tickets.
Yeah, there's a lot of repetitive dialogue. Daniel's, yeah. like, has a little twinkle in his eye when he's retelling this, because that's, like, verbatim what the dialogue is. It's like... And she says, I feel like a sneaky Pete.
Yeah. Like, which is a great term.
It is.
And then it sort of just progresses. Like, he goes back to, like, see all these things, like, the promises of the future and things he's lived through. Because he says he was born in the 60s, I think.
Yeah.
So, like, he's lived through the things that people in the 30s are like, this is what the 60s will look like. And it's sort of fun for him to see kind of where the world was at. But then sort of keeps coming for this woman and her niece, right?
Virginia,
the niece, and just sort of courts them in like a very like a mostly platonic way. Not until later do we hear any mention of like he wants to kiss her or anything. Like he just like wants to get to know, like spend time with this person.
Yeah, he's
so
just
it stays kind of innocent. Yeah.
Yes. Here's my problem Well, here's one of my many problems, just in general in my life. It seems like it's a cute story of, like, a man falling in love with a woman from afar, and he literally alters time and the past in order to, like, be connected to her. None of that time travel stuff, like, exists again after he's done it. It's not like
yeah,
he's,
there's
like,
no consequences.
Permanently altering time. But he's literally bending time and space to, like, end up with this woman, which in itself is, like, kind of a romantic thing.
Yeah, it feels like a 90s, like, romantic movie.
Yeah, like, I would literally do anything to be with you. Cool. Except for the fact that she is, like, an unwilling, like, victim in the, like, victim is maybe a harsher way to say it, but she's, like, being actively preyed upon.
Yeah.
And manipulated. Like, it's not, it feels unfair.
Yeah, because he knows things about her, so he can come in prepped. And it's interesting, though, because I think that it is intentionally like that, in my opinion, because as the story progresses, like, he starts to be punished for this, mm-hmm. and ultimately is removed from the world, potentially.
Yeah.
Like, potentially dead.
Yeah, that was weird.
Yeah, I liked that, though, because I think where the story was going, I was worried it was going to be kind of this wrap-up, like, kind of cliche thing of, like, oh, did he get a stay?
Yeah.
Because as the clock's ticking down, he only gets to spend 22 hours in this place.
Yes.
And you have to be back where you started by the 22 hours, or no one knows what'll happen.
Yeah, Tom really builds up a sense of suspense in that final couple of pages. We know that he needs to go back, but that really the only place he's happy is in this world with this new woman.
Yeah. It almost feels like it's like a projected computer world like The Matrix, but then in the end, like, he, like, is physically coming apart, like his atoms are separating.
Yeah.
Which is interesting because if there are consequences, if this is like an alternate timeline and now Carmen remembers him, like, she just saw someone, like, actually fall apart, and, like, Carmen and Virginia's lives are, like, forever shifted by this horrifying event they witnessed.
Right. I mean, it's a very gruesome last, like, paragraph.
Yeah.
Where his blood is, like, pouring out of his nose, and he says the last thing he sees is, like, the terror in her eyes.
Yeah.
That's haunting.
But I like that, because I like that it sort of shifts your expectation, because I think you're like, oh, he's past the time he's supposed to be back, but he's going to continue on because he really feels for this girl, and maybe she's starting to feel for him, and then
love conquers all.
Yeah, but then no, you can't do that.
I do like the idea of it being a consequence. I hadn't thought of that.
Yeah, I think it works nicely, because I think if it went on as straight laced, this, I would not like the story. I'd be like, oh, this is a very manipulative story emotionally. Mm-hmm. And the fact that it does this kind of 180 turn that is justified, because I think with how his character is behaving, like, he doesn't deserve what he's going after.
Mm-hmm. Something that I really like about this, and what I've been really enjoying so far about all of Tom's writing, is that he just kind of, he throws us into a world, and it's almost like you just take it. Like, you're here and you don't question it, and you don't try to find plot holes or problems with the logic. It's like, this is the world that this story takes place in, and this is how things work.
Yeah, it's kind of, it winks, like, some of the company names and, like, the Whipperjet Viewliner. Like, they're all, like, really cheesy names. And I do think that is a smart play to, like, kind of just drop us in and, like, we have to accept it. Because rather than have, like, the time travel thing of, like, well, here's how the fundamentals of this work.
Yeah.
It's just, like, it exists, people can do it, and there might be consequences, but we're not really sure.
Yeah, and here's what happens.
Because it kind of adds some tension on top of it, because anything could happen, and it would make sense, because we don't know.
Yeah, we don't know what the rules are.
We don't understand the rules.
Did you know where the typewriter is in this?
No, I gotta be honest, I missed it, and I did not skim back through before this to find it.
Well, it's pretty quick. It's like right when they're entering the World's Fair for the first time or something like that. And he points out the things that are appearing at the World's Fair. And he says there is a giant Underwood typewriter, an Aquacade show, and Electro the Mechanical Man. So it's like all these little entertainment things that you can see at the World's Fair.
Little gadgets.
Giant typewriter.
Of course, we're put back into a place where, like, a typewriter's being introduced.
Yeah. Wow. The past is important to us.
Yeah.
These are the meditations of my heart. Just kidding. I love that one.
Well, that, yeah.
What do you think?
I liked it. As a complete story, I really liked it, because I was worried that it was just a very singular thing, and then I think it became something very interesting.
I could see this as, like, a movie.
Yeah, this could be a cool little... Yeah, you could make this easily into a... It has, like, a very About Time aesthetic to it, mm-hmm. where there's, like, the romantic play, and then, like, that dark edge to it that really makes you ponder.
And that what makes him stay. It's like, there is something dark about a man who has everything, like, needs to escape his own life.
Yeah. It actually is kind of a lot like About Time, now that I think about it.
That was a good movie.
Great movie.
Cool.
Okay. Next one. Stay with us.
Stay with us.
Stay with us as we talk about Stay With Us. This one's weird. This one's a script.
It's the format's a little jarring. I gotta be honest, I don't do well with this kind of stuff.
I gotta be honest, I got taken out when there's an LL Cool J reference at the beginning, and I was like, this is written by an adult.
Yeah.
Trying to make
He doesn't know that we don't listen to LL Cool J.
Yeah, I didn't know if that was supposed to put us in a year, like when this year was taking place, but...
Right, and now that I think about it, do they ever say what year it is?
Not that I know of. There's a lot... Music's from all over the place.
I guess I kind of... assumed that this was a very futuristic one because of all the technology and the gadgets that are constantly...
And coming straight out of the previous story.
Yeah, I guess your mind naturally goes there.
This one's about a man named FXR, who is the head honcho of some big corporation that owns a lot of things in Las Vegas. It's sort of another thing of like someone with all the money that has no care in the world. And it's also about his assistant or, like, secondhand woman. I don't quite know. Yeah, I think
she's probably an assistant, but, like much
she's
more.
In charge. Yeah. Like, she's running the company, really.
Miss Mercury.
And then it's, for a minute, it's about their newest employee, but then he's gone.
Yeah, this one was really hard for me. I mean, maybe as an actual movie, it would make sense.
Yeah, so it's set up in a screenplay format, so we see character names, and we read their dialogue, and then we have little kind of action segments that explain what's happening, and sort of people's, what they're doing in the ins and outs of the story.
Lots of music cues.
Yeah, sort of the core of this is that this owner of this company wants to lay a solar pipeline facility somewhere, and he's been cooped up in Vegas and wants to go on a road trip of sorts. So he has his assistant, Miss Mercury, go buy a classic car, an old car, says an old, like, beat-em-up, like, under $800 car, and they go down to another city to look at this land. In the process of doing this, they meet these two people who own a hotel that they stay at, mm-hmm. and you sort of get to know that whole crew, and yeah, that's kind of the story.
Well, here's what we know about, what's the main guy's name?
FXR.
We know FXR is this like eccentric genius billionaire.
Yeah.
Who basically needs an assistant to take care of him at all times, even though he's a grown man. Miss Mercury is a character I strongly identify with in the sense that she knows her work and that's pretty much it.
Yeah. I think she even says that. She's like, I work because the paycheck's fat and I understand it, even though she seems to sort of hate it.
She knows there's like no point to any of it.
Yeah.
But she's good at her job, so she just does it. And she lets it kind of like make her bananas. Like,
yeah.
That opening scene about the breakfast, and she's like, oh no. Which I thought was actually a really cute scene.
Yeah, and it's funny because you and I have worked on some sets together, mm-hmm. and we worked on a set, we won't say what it was, but with some celebrities, maybe not the right term, but some people who had sort of personality similar to this, of like very specific demands, and they would sort of freak out when they were not met, like a Starbucks order that was wrong.
It was Big Little Lies that we worked on. Just kidding.
But yeah, I know this type of person.
Yeah, who's like, if I don't have this thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can taste there's only one shot of espresso in my coffee. I'm mm-hmm. like, all right.
I guess I'll have it then.
Yeah, so they basically, the eccentric billionaire, he wants to go traveling, figure this out. He wants to do it old school because he wants to get away. So they head on south, I think. They meet B and Phil, who own this little motel joint.
Yeah.
And They're like the simple things. They're not making a ton of money. They got a guitarist named Jesus that they love, but you know, he's got to go work.
They're so sentimental. It's like, and they're so trusting.
Yeah.
This billionaire shows up. He refuses to put down a line of credit. Openly tells them that he's had problems with credit in the past, which was
weird. He's just kind of making up stories. Yeah.
And so they just let him stay in their hotel that normally costs like $300 for 12 bucks. They're like so nice.
They're just like, please stay.
And they let him change. There's this almost like infuriating portion where he's getting settled into his new room and he just like criticizes everything. He hates the art on the walls. He hates the smell of the pillowcases and he hates the firmness of the mattress. They like bend over backwards to basically like pay, like they're losing money on this
transaction. But I kind of think, especially after once we kind of get to the conclusion, like I sort of think that they kind of know who this is. And so they're kind of playing it up because I think they know why he's come.
Yeah.
Because when we get sort of toward the conclusion of the story and he makes an offer for their stuff, like he kind of comes out like, I knew. Mm-hmm. So I'm wondering how much of that is like him being his thing and kind of I think he's sort of testing them at the same time they're sort of like playing his game because they kind of know
something's up. That is cute. You're much more perceptive than I am.
One, it's sort of, it's kind of, because it's in this format, it's sort of like a, I don't know, it seems very base level because we know a lot of times what's in their head. Mm-hmm. And it's all weirdly, I don't know, my issue with this is it's like weirdly simple in that like Miss Mercury is this really interesting person who's like very sure of herself. Like her plot line becomes that she falls for like this mechanic guy.
Yeah.
Just immediately swooned over him and like breaks sort of everything she is down.
Yeah. Which is tied into, I'm sorry to interrupt you.
No, no.
It feels like that's tied into this like mythical, this hotel is like its own entity.
Yeah.
That, and B and Phil kind of like wink at each other like, there's the magic of the Mount Olympus or whatever the name of the hotel is. People can't help but fall in love in this place. It's like got this mystical vibe.
Yeah, and it sort of plays up because their relationship, like the banter we've seen between them at the beginning they seem like a new couple almost, mm-hmm. but they've been married for a really long time.
Yeah, they're so in love. Yeah, so what happens at the end?
So basically he makes the offer. Well, him and B and Phil have a lot of conversations and kind of talk about their past. And he finally makes the offer and they accept. But to keep sort of the magic of what they had built alive, he builds this giant sign of them because they were sort of the welcoming force to this and they welcomed them in. So he ends up building all of his stuff there, but kind of keeps this centerpiece of like why this area was important to him and them alive with this giant sign. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, it's revealed that, like, Jesus is back and he's got a band in their plane. And, you know, Miss Mercury is now shacked up with...
Yeah, with Tommy the mechanic.
Tommy the mechanic.
And his little kid.
Yeah, so it's, like, a very happy ending. And you sort of get, like, the reversal of, like, FXR is a 600 billionaire. But he still has, like, this, like, really nostalgic, loving heart and wants to do good things, apparently.
Mm-hmm. It's sweet.
Yeah, they kind of play him up with all of the stereotypes of, like, someone in his position of power, but then he's, like, still a good dude.
Right. I think in that scene in the beginning with Miss Mercury and the new hire, maybe that's an unfair portrayal of FXR. It's like what she's afraid he'll do, but he's never actually done anything so bad.
Yeah, like maybe she's worked with people who, in this same kind of mindset, same amount of money, how they behave. And I think it's to also because we don't meet FXR until they have a big conversation about him before we meet him. So I think we're supposed to kind of believe that there's going to be this shift, and then it's not. He's just like this strange dude.
Misunderstood.
Yeah.
Yeah, and maybe she has to tell herself that he's this manic, like, overbearing boss, because it's, like, easier for her to understand why she is so invested in this job.
Yeah, it gives her an excuse to, like, well, it's hard work, and it's this, and this kind of demanding. Where in reality, like, it is, but there's maybe a different way that she could pull it off and, like, still have a life outside of it.
Right, but she's... Well, so there's a portion that I underlined, and I felt like I liked a lot, where Miss Mercury is telling Bea and Phil why she's not married, because that's one of the first things they ask.
Yeah.
Is if she's married to FXR, and they're like, eh, no. She says, a man would complicate my life in the extreme. I need a man right now like your chicken coop needs a satellite dish. I'm unattached, connected to no one. The day will come when I chuck it all and bid my boss adieu and go for the mate, the kid, the handmade Halloween costumes, all of it. Until then, I'm happily solo, working for this guy. Which I'm like, same.
Yeah. So did this story fill you with hope that someday your car would break down and Tommy, the mechanic, would show up?
Right. No, it didn't. No.
All right.
I feel like, I don't know, it just feels like she kind of like gave up.
Yeah, that, or I think we're supposed to, if this were an actual like little short film, like we're supposed to like really be engaged in the magic.
Of, yeah.
That there is like something otherworldly about this place.
Yeah.
I think if maybe if we saw it versus reading it, we would like, or if it just dived in a little more to like, there is truly something strange about this.
It felt like two separate things.
Yeah.
That scene in the hotel where she's like frantically on her phone and she's typing and she's can barely even like have a conversation. And then where does Nicholas go?
Yeah, Nick gets dropped.
Bye.
That's, you know. She don't need him.
No, she doesn't. She can do everything herself. She's proven. It is a cute little... I think I would... I don't know that I like that this was written like a script.
Yeah, I'd be curious if I'm curious why he chose that format. Because mm-hmm. it's a really specific choice. And it'd be interesting to see if someone actually took it and made a short film out of it.
You should do that. I will play Miss Mercury.
I guess if we, once we're talking to Tom, RL, I'll pitch it and be like, I'll do this, I guess.
I guess.
Well, I don't want to come across as like,
yeah, you know, be needy. Really cool about yeah. it.
If you want to fund it, I'll do it.
Listen, you already wrote it.
Yeah, it's already written, it's copyrighted. I'll just put it in camera. It's perfect.
It'll be so easy. Did you find the typewriter in this one?
I did find the typewriter in this one.
Whoa, look at you.
Because they're typing on it in the reception area when Miss Mercury enters the room, or FXR enters the room.
Yeah, the typing stops.
I think it's called like an Olympia, too.
Oh, Olympic. Same as the hotel?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I believe it was, at least.
They're just sweet little stories.
Yeah.
I don't know that there's really a message in this one I'm supposed to pull.
I sort of just took it as like a general, like, embrace the magic, like, in places you wouldn't expect it.
Which you would know about because you were in Disneyland.
Oh, yeah.
The most magical place literally ever.
I mean, not as magic as Mount Olympus, apparently.
No.
Mount Olympia.
I bet so many people got proposed to this weekend.
Oh, we actually saw a proposal.
Really?
Yeah, as we were leaving in front of the Magic Castle.
Was it called? Oh, yeah.
Yeah. With like 10 friends of their friends watching and recording it. Like, she had to know it was coming at that point because everyone had their phone out.
I would.
But good for them. It was cute. Like that. They also looked like they were 17, but you know.
Aw.
It's good.
It cute. I hope they're happy.
I do too.
Okay.
Good luck to you guys if you're listening. Congratulations.
Thanks for taking the time to listen to our podcast after your engagement. Do you want to do our next segment?
I'm hoping that you do, because you probably have more than I do.
Okay, so you know what that means.
I do.
It's time for Hank's Happenings. Okay, this has been posted by, I think he's a friend of yours, Josh Gammon, in our Facebook group.
Oh, yes.
The Talkin' Tom, Pod Hanks Tomcast group, where we post every single thing about Tom Hanks, and then we hashtag Hanks Happenings so that everyone knows. So, Tom is in a new World War II drama called Greyhound that has a release date. Now, this isn't new territory for Tom. He's done plenty of World War II dramas.
Yeah. He's produced some, too.
Yeah, this man is the physical embodiment of the past is important to us. That's like what he says every day when he wakes up. I feel like I'm being kind of mean right now. I respect him.
You know, I think he has like actual past events that are important.
Yeah.
Like he has like, I think there are a lot of typewriter things and like things about the past, but like he's focusing on things that are actually important about the past.
Yeah. I'm simplifying it. Anyway, so he's got another new movie. I mean, this guy is like, here's the plot. Greyhound, based on C.S. Forrester's novel, The Good Shepherd. Hanks is set to play Captain Ernest Krauss, the first commander of a U.S. destroyer who is leading an international fleet of 37 Allied ships across the North Atlantic with Nazi U-boats in hot pursuit. I don't know if I'm excited for this.
I don't have an opinion yet.
Yeah.
He's in it, so...
Have a choice. Sense of warmth that I did when I was announced as Mr. Rogers.
Yeah.
Truly, how does he have time? He's like in his 60s, right? I don't know. We should know.
There's some basic facts we don't know.
We'll get to it.
But yeah. Any more Hanks happenings?
You know, I wish.
That's kind of a bit... I mean, a movie announcement's a big one.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, we don't do talk. We don't do talk Tom to us on these minisodes. So... that's all you get for now, suckers.
Yeah. Skips. So next week, we're doing The Burbs.
Yeah, boy.
So you got 1 week left to watch The Burbs. And then you got to talk to us about it so we can put you in the dang podcast.
Come on. Get I know in everybody there. Loves The Burbs.
Because The Burbs is a good one. We're into the good stuff now. And then in 2 weeks from now, we're going to be wrapping up our minisodes of Uncommon Type.
The book club's over.
Book club's over. And we're doing 3 shorts to wrap it up. Bow, bow, bow. We're doing Ghosty Costas.
Oh, baby.
Our Town Today with Hank Fassay.
Oh, fucking Christ.
Your Evangelista.
Esperanza.
I'm assuming it's supposed to rhyme. I don't understand
it. Oh, wrong. Whatever.
And then Steve Wong is perfect.
Tom. Funny.
And then we have the final page, which is acknowledgments, which hopefully... I haven't looked at it yet, but maybe we're in.
Oh, probably.
I won't spoil it for myself yet.
Don't. Spoiler alert. Well, that's good. We'll also do a little wrap-up, our favorite stories from the selection, from the blah, 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 from the book club. And we'll talk about future plans for minisodes.
Minisodes? I don't know why I'm saying that.
Nope. That's it now.
Minisodes.
Wow.
Well, cool then.
That was so fun.
That was great. Where can you find us?
All right. As always, you want to continue the conversation, you can find us on our website, talkintom.com. That's talking without the G. We're also literally everywhere on social media.
Facebook, Instagram, Twitter.
SoundCloud.
There's probably another one.
We'll probably build a MySpace page.
Did I say Instagram?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, it's there too. Instagram's a good one too. All of those, Pod Hanks Tomcast.
Oh, baby. And I am posting once a week.
We're posting the good stuff. We're not overwhelming you because we're not crazy. We're not trying to get us unfollowed by being annoying.
No. It's like just a little reminder. Hanks-related memes.
Yeah, just a little post good updates. Stuff. So once again, watch The Burbs, ladies and gents.
Boys and girls.
And in the meantime, I'm Daniel.
I'm Josie. Thanks for listening.